Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. This is our Q&A series where I answer your questions regarding the infinite banking concept, becoming your own banker. Let's get started. And this, I don't know the guy's name. It's a bunch of digital. It's an alphanumeric name. DC343JFU4. Okay. Episode 245, How Free Do You Want to Be? And this was a couple of months ago. They say, great podcast. I'm a big fan of IBC. But there's a question I have been thinking about. Maybe you could share your thoughts on. You say if we bank with conventional banks, we are contributing to the business cycle on an individual level, which would lead the consumer to think banking, quote unquote, with an insurance company doesn't contribute to the business cycle, .. But your premium dollars that go to an insurance company still end up in a commercial bank, regardless, period. The insurance companies all have bank accounts. Just because you personally aren't depositing money into a conventional bank doesn't negate the outcome you are attempting to avoid. Is there a way to actually avoid contributing in today's world? I would say contributing to the business cycle, I would guess. Okay. Unfortunately, in today's world, I don't think it is possible to avoid contributing to the commercial banking system. Every dollar always ends up in the commercial banking system, regardless of where you spend it, save it, or invest it. I guess the question is buried in there, right? And I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate the good comments, positive comments, and I appreciate all the comments, good, bad, or indifferent. Okay. And appreciate you being a fan. So you say, and so let me say it this way, that Nelson used to say this too. And if you think through it, I think it makes sense. You are part of the problem whenever you borrow money from a third party lender, right? You're part of the problem. Causing inflation, you know, it's much more than just contributing to the business. I know a lot of things contribute to the business cycle. You know, government spending to their cronies, the first five in line, once they print the money that didn't exist and they spend it through their cronies, that creates inflation in and of itself. Right. So there's a lot of things that contribute to the business cycle. You know, the Fed monopolizing manipulating the interest rates, that contributes to the business cycle. Inflation contributes to the business cycle. But Nelson used to say that you're part of the problem. If you borrow money from the third party lender, if you're borrowing money from the bank, you're part of the problem. Why? Because the loan didn't exist until you signed your John Henry. And the money didn't exist until you signed your John Henry. The bank didn't have the money. They created it out of thin air as soon as you signed your John Henry. And so the banks have the ability to leverage. All right, you put $1 million in the bank. People, it's very common. I said it, and it has changed the fractional reserve banking system that we enjoy today and are born to be a debt slave of, in my opinion. Fractional. See, it used to be the lending limits were like 10 to 1 on average. And that's what most people talk about. You put $1 million in the bank then as a deposit, and then the bank can lend out $10 million. They're creating that $9 million out of nothing, right? That's leverage. Okay. That's how you're creating or being part of the problem. When you borrow money from the third-party lender who can print money that didn't exist on your John Henry, right? And then he also said, you know, banks lend money that doesn't exist, and that is evil. And it is. Okay. So if we just think about this, number one, the life insurance companies cannot inflate money. Right. They cannot leverage, they cannot inflate the money. like a bank can. All right. So if I borrow money from the life insurance company, it is because I have paid a premium and I have accumulated a cash value that I have a contractual right to collateralize. All right. Yes. So they can't, they're not going to, they cannot inflate money. They cannot leverage money. They will not loan me more than I have available in cash value. So if I have $100,000 in cash value, they're going to lend me up to about $90,000, $95,000 of that. Every company's a little different. There's some internal reserving that goes on. But the point is they cannot inflate. All right, so I'm not contributing to the business cycle broadly, as you say. No, I'm exactly doing the quite the opposite if I practice the infinite banking concept. Now, in Nelson's fundamentals, number one, think long range. Okay, well, this, you know, that's a challenge. I get it, but you can do it. Number two, don't be afraid to capitalize. I get it. That's a challenge, but you can do it. Number three is don't steal the peas. Right? Don't create loans that you're not going to repay, you know, when you collateralize your policies. And number four is don't do business with banks outside of savings and checking. All right. I mean, we live in the 21st century, right? You cannot get away from banking, and no one's suggesting that you do. And this idea of banking, quote unquote, the infinite banking concept in the aspect that banking is nothing but the movement of money, right? But then it's also being in the position of the banker. All right. The banker gets to do whatever they want to do. And I mean, if you look at this, if you go to the bank, you're going to be a depositor. All right. So you're the depositor. And then if you want to borrow money, you're going to go to the bank teller, the vice president, and, you know, ask him for the loan. And he's going to tell you how much collateralized you got to cough up. And he's going to tell you the terms in which you have to pay it back, the loan. And he's going to tell you the rate in which you're going to have to pay that loan back at. Complete and total control. And the note's probably callable, right? All the, you know, the Fed just shows up and they reclassify loans. Every loan's either A, B, C, or D. And Mr. Bank, I'm the Fed. Mr. Bank, you got to call all the D notes and you got to reclassify all the A notes and the C and the B notes to C. Yeah. Don't tell me, maybe some of you have never heard that. I'm telling you, in fact, this is historical, right? They have done this many times. Will they do it again? Who knows? I don't know. The fact is you're not controlling that loan. You're just a depositor at the bank. Then you're a customer of the bank. When you ask for money that didn't exist until you asked for it and collateralized for it, all right? And then who gets all the profits of that? Oh, the bank owner. All right, you want to change all that? You can with the infinite banking concept. Don't get lost in the details of, oh, this thing is better. I should do a HELOC or I should buy some squirrely designed policy because I don't have enough liquidity tomorrow after I pay a premium. No. Oh, and I shouldn't be properly insured, right? Because, you know, all the people that I love, if I die, they lose me and all my future income, and I want to leave them dependent upon someone else because I didn't have adequate death benefit, all right? So I'm really trying to answer the questions. I'm really not trying to take these side notes, but it's so easy, all right? And if you don't think it is, I invite you to come and be a guest and see how easy it is to go off okay. Back on point, Jimmy. I'm here. Okay. So the premium dollars that go to the insurance company end up in a commercial bank. Well, yeah, for the time being, right? Because it's coming from a banking institution. When I send them the premium, whether I write a check or do a digital transfer or wire transfer, ACH, you know, it's going from my bank to their bank. Yep, they have a bank. Oh, wait, what are they going to do? Like everybody, they're going to have enough operating capital on hand with the drive-through window to be able to operate a business or a household, checking and savings. But beyond that, they're going to put their capital to work, the life insurance company. So all the money is not sitting in the bank of the life insurance company. And most of these life insurance companies have multiple banks, right? I'm just saying that the money is not going to sit there. The life insurance company has to put that money to work. So they're going to go buy real estate, high-grade corporate real estate, bonds, government bonds, corporate bonds of varying durations, all investment-grade bonds. Why would they do that, James? Because they have to put the capital to work to meet the future obligations of that contract that they're a party to, the life insurance policy. You're going to die someday. You're going to graduate. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Oh, and then by contract, you can get mad and quit anytime in the future. Well, there's a guaranteed cash surrender value with every whole life policy. That's a guaranteed obligation to the life insurance company. So the capital that they're putting to work to meet those future obligations, the death benefit and the cash value, is not sitting in a bank, I assure you. It's working. And then if I back up a minute ago, you know, I talked about how this leverage, you know, the banks leverage, they inflate the money supply, right? You put $1 million in, they can lend 10. There is no reserve requirement today, March of 2025. Go look it up, the Fed, right? Go look it up. Your bank doesn't, there is no reserve requirement in our banking system. Now, you tell me how solid and strong that is, right? And if we're talking about the infinite banking concept, becoming your own banker, quote unquote, so you can control the banking function, how solid do you want that to be? You're going to move from fragile banking system, no reserves, are you kidding me, to a fragile system built with HELOCs and leverage and ungodly structures, none of which is stable over the long term? I would think not. I mean, if that's your thinking, the infinite banking concept, as taught by R. Nelson Nash, may not be a good fit for you. It's okay. I just wanted to back up and point out that there are no reserve requirements. That's the third or fourth time I've said that. Think about that. Okay, look, I'm an eternal optimist. I'm not a doom and gloom guy. That's just a fact that there are no reserve requirements. All right, now I don't really think it's possible. He continues, you know, is there a way to actually avoid contributing in today's world? Unfortunately, in today's world, I don't think it's possible to avoid contributing to the commercial banking system. I don't think you can get away from banking. You know, do you have to participate in the inflation of the money supply? No, you don't have to. Or you can mitigate or diminish that as much as possible. Is it going to happen overnight? No, it cannot happen overnight. You know, it took Nelson Nash 14 years to get rid of what he called the snakes and the dragons, right? The lenders. So, and the guy had been paying a lot of life insurance premium for an awful long time. So this idea that you're going to right the boat overnight isn't going to happen. Now you can change the course overnight, the course that you're on, the direction that you're going, you can change that in an instant almost, right? Or you can begin the process of that change in an instant, and it can last your whole lifetime with proper adjustments. And I said it, and I like to say it because in my mind, I can see it, you know. If I'm an airplane driver and I take off from Florida, all right, or let me say I'm taking off from California. I'd want to escape California to go to Florida, okay? All I have to do is point the plane east. Isn't that right? Yeah. And then I have to make continual adjustments along the way, or I'm going to wind up in Chicago or Cuba, right? But I got to take off. I got to get started, right? That can happen just almost in an instant. And then with continual adjustments along the way, I'll land exactly where I want to go. This is no different. Okay. And there are no shortcuts. There's no shortcut from California to Florida. There's only a direct path, right? And maybe you can catch a headwind. Maybe you can catch a tailwind. And that's exactly what the infinite banking concept does for people who implement it in their life, is they just put jet engines to what they're doing. They're going to catch a tailwind into everything that they do financially. Okay. Every dollar ends up in the commercial banking system, regardless whether you save it, spend it. There's no question all the money flows through banking institutions. That doesn't mean that the life insurance companies can leverage the money, you know, and they don't leverage the money. So, you know, I'm contributing less to the business cycle today than in a negative way than I was 30 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. And I'm not, us as individuals, we're not the only movers to the business cycle. Okay, that was a lot, but I appreciate it. And then there are responses to that comment that I just went through. One is by Fat Tones. And he says, when you collateralize your cash value, then your premiums aren't being parked at a bank. You are earning the return for the insurance company. Well, that's true. You know, if I borrow against the cash value, like you're saying, if I collateralize cash value, and I do something with that cash value, right? I go put that to work. And it's not sitting in a bank. Is money flowing through banks and all that whole process? Yeah. But, and can the bank leverage? Yeah. And they're going to. Of course they're going to. That's what they do. But I'm not going to go pay a premium. I'm not going to have money in my checking account to pay a life insurance policy premium to collateralize that policy to put that money back into a checking or savings account, right? I'm going to put that money is going to go to work, right, for either a cash flow, a deferred benefit of some kind, or both. And Fat Tones continue. You are earning the return for the life insurance company. As soon as I take a loan, the life insurance company is going to charge me interest. Yes, that will then earn a return for the life insurance company. Yes, and it'll be a direct charge to me, an interest charge on, you know, the loan interest. I'm going to pay that. Oh, and I know that blows some people. They just can't be okay with that. I understand. But, you know, it's a mutual company, so I'm a policy owner of a mutual company that gives me an ownership position in the company because there are no shareholders. And then when the company's profitable, oh, they get to share their experience with me, the owner, in the form of a dividend. And I think there's a question here. I understand exactly how a dividend is classified under the Internal Revenue Code. It's a refund, a return, not a refund. It's a return of premium. I don't give a dang what you call it. I don't care what you call it. Just pay it. The dividend. Okay. All right. Thank you. Then there's another one, Opus One. I believe y'all have some pretty creative names on your social media. So good job. A deposit doesn't increase the quantity of the money. Taking out a loan from a company that is allowed to loan money that doesn't exist is what causes the business cycle. Partially, you know, that's one thing that contributes to the boom bust cycle, no question. But exactly what I said, Opus One, and so I appreciate you. The deposit is not creating the inflation, right? And the deposit doesn't have to be very dang large if there are no reserve requirements in the banking system in the United States today. I mean, that ought to just like not set well with you, that there are no reserve requirements. So it's taking the loan. That's when the money, the digits are created out of nothing whenever you took the loan. And so getting back to what I said earlier, that's when Nelson said many times that, you know, you're part of the problem, right? Because you're creating, you have a part in that creation of money that didn't exist when you take a loan. All right. So just because the truth hurts doesn't mean it's not true. This question is episode 245. How free do you want to be? That was released. Oh, that was earlier this year. So Fat Tones says, I can just hear the critics now. Quote unquote, mutual insurance companies don't distribute profits. They only refund overpayment of premium, unquote, or finish quotes. Yeah. Meanwhile, isn't it funny? how none of these talking heads who shill for 401ks and IRAs became wealthy following their own advice? Well, now, I don't know if they did or they didn't, but I'm sure they came. They became wealthy by selling all those financial products. That's for sure. You know, speaking of 401ks, so I appreciate the comment, and it's a cool name, Fat Tones. My wife and I, my daughter, our daughter, you know, we were up in Chicago a couple of weeks ago. I love Chicago. You know, we flew in the day after St. Patty's Day, so the river's still green, and I like architecture. So this would be like the third Chicago riverboat tour, architectural tour that we took, that I've taken. Anyway, we're all on there, and I'm taking photos, you know, just having fun. We were up there visiting college campuses, okay? And anyway, so the whole point here that I have, and I took photos of this, you know, Fidelity's got a massive building right there. I think it's right there on the Magnificent Mile, right? You can see it from the boat. And I even took photos later because I didn't want to miss the opportunity. Fidelity's address, downtown Chicago, I believe is 401 Michigan Avenue. You know, it's like, I just thought that was ironic. And so thanks for calling that to my memory when you talk about 401ks there, Fat Tones. Okay. In this question, episode 250, The Power of Capital with Greg. That episode was released just last month, February. And let me tell you what, episode 250, Greg, if you haven't seen that, you should go listen to that. In my opinion, I'm telling you, I think it was good. It was better than I thought it was. They're all better than I think they're going to be, you know, when I have guests on. Not talking about me. I mean, I do a fair job or I do an okay job. Okay. The question is, this is Orlando. Orlando, I think you're an agent as well, which is fine. But are you guys suggesting that low death benefit with higher cash premiums for the most efficient policy for IBC? Man, I know that went an hour. And if you're an agent, I know you're listening to all these things out in the big wide world. This cannot be the only thing you got out of that episode. Are you guys suggesting a low death benefit with higher cash premiums for the most efficient policy for IBC? The mere fact that you think, or I think anyone thinks there is a most efficient policy for IBC for everyone is hogwash, all right? Now, if I'm going to perform the banking function, I do want a high cash value, yes. Does that mean that I want the least amount of death benefit possible? You know, and I've used that terminology 20 years ago, you know, as much cash possible, least amount of death benefit. Yeah, for top, you know, a banking top, quote-unquote banking top policy. But it doesn't mean that I don't want to solve for death benefit, and that completely that idea that death benefit is bad and must be pressed down next to zero along with the base premium pressed down next to zero is flawed thinking. All right. There's, and I have works on it, on the death benefit, why you want a death benefit, the power of the death benefit. Listen to me. Please. The cash value of a whole life policy must equal the death benefit, the face amount at age 120. The cash value must equal the face guaranteed by contract, must equal the face amount at age 120. I know you're not going to live to age 120. I'm not either. I get it. And I know the life insurance companies can put these curves out wherever they want within reason. It's not exactly uncontrolled. You know, so they could put that curve out at age 110, right? But fundamentally, actually, clearly, directly, the cash value must equal the face amount at age 120. Okay, on the base whole life policy, right? It's guaranteed. That's a guaranteed component of the cash value. It's increasing every year to meet the face amount at age 120, to equal the face amount at age 120. If that's true, And it is. My question to you then is, do you want a small base face amount or do you want a large one? That alone, conceptually, should answer the question whether you should have a 85-15, an 80-20, or 90-10 type policy. Now, that does not mean that it should be an all-base premium. I'm not saying that either. All right. No, I'm not suggesting that the higher cash value premiums or the higher cash premiums with the lowest death benefit. I'm not suggesting any one thing for any or all individuals, right? I give advice to our clients. We build solutions that are tailor-made for our clients because we understand them. We understand where they're at, what they're doing, and what they want to do within limits, without any clickbaity, you know, fairy dust and rainbows and unicorns. All right. It's actually relatively simple. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's relatively simple to put beautiful solutions together for beautiful people. Okay. So I would typically, though, I'll say this, we would typically emphasize the cash value if we're going to get into banking, yes, but we're not going to sacrifice the death benefit to do it. And we're not necessarily going to make all of that happen in one single policy, all right, that's mutilated, the character and the structure of the policy being mutilated to achieve that. It's not going to happen in this office. Okay. A gentleman, he's a practitioner at the Nelson Nash Institute. Josh, I believe, sent this article, and I just seen it and I perused it, and I think this is of Fortune magazine today, 2027. The incoming chair, Paul Atkins, of the Securities and Exchange Commission, right? And I was told by the AV ninjas that this is the people are getting excited about this guy in the crypto world, right? So Paul Atkins is, nominated by Donald Trump to become the Securities and Exchange Commission. I think it's going to happen in short order. And there's just a little bit of an article here that talks about the fact that him and his wife own 54 life insurance policies. And I understand he talks about I didn't read the whole article in detail. And I know there's more than this article out in the big wide world on him, but 54 life insurance policies, some are whole life, some are universal life. And I think he does, you know, life settlement type investments. The Securities and Exchange Commission's chair, him and his wife, own 54 life insurance policies. Of course, they own cryptocurrency and Alibaba, and I haven't read their disclosures. You know, they have to disclose all their holdings. I just thought that was interesting. The head of the SEC, however much power or influence he actually has or doesn't have, I don't know. But he must know something about life insurance to own 54 policies. And maybe he's just got so dang much money he doesn't know where to put it all. I don't know. But if you own 54 of anything, you've probably done some homework. I just thought that was interesting. Okay. Thank you for listening. I sure had fun. I hope you enjoyed. Thank you for listening. If you have a question that you would like answered, email me at james@bankingwithlife.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time.